at newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Hokas, Pierlo Fon Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And speaking of CSU Channel Islands, we're lucky enough to have Dr. Tracy Lee Clark, an associate professor of communications at CSU Channel Islands. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
So we were, before the show, fighting with each other, and Tracy Lee was able to resolve the conflict. Luckily, we are in the midst of a conversation about conflict communications, which is sort of an oxymoron, conflict communications. So tell us a little bit about what conflict communications is.
For sure. Well, we study, the neat thing about conflict management is it is approached from a bunch of different fields, whether it's sociology or peace studies or psychology. We approach it, or I specifically approach it from communication. So the idea that the words that you say can either ignite a conflict or resolve a conflict or maintain a conflict. And so we study conflict situations from the very words that you say that sort of guide or interact a conflict.
And it runs the gamut of things from, I guess, a little baby trying to get the attention of their mother to bullying as an adolescent to working in a business and as we see today in the political spectrum. So it's really an important subject.
Thank you. I think so too. And actually what you say is really, really wise, because I tell my students the same things that they fight about in the sandbox, whether it's resources or issues of identity or you hurt my feelings or I want to play with that toy, are the very same things that we fight with in communities and in internationally in politics. It just looks a little bit different. We just get a little more sophisticated, but it's the same sorts of ideas. And when I teach courses in conflict management, we talk about it on an interpersonal level, and then we talk about business negotiations, then we talk about it on a community level, and then finally international.
Yeah, you've also taught, besides teaching communications in the liberal arts area, you've also taught in business, because it is an important subject in business.
It is, and I actually do consulting on the side. I work with businesses that are in conflict, and I also teach at Pepperdine. I teach a night course to their law school.
So did you read that? There was an article about 3 weeks ago. This woman has the second most watched TED Talk. And she teaches, I guess, this is not how they described it, but I'll describe it as nonverbal dominance, how you need to, how your body movements are an important part of how you present things.
And oh, absolutely.
So when you mentioned before communications, it's not just the speech.
Right.
It's also how you present yourself to the world.
Yes. And in fact, we call that power over or power with communication. Power over is how you demonstrate a hierarchy through your cadence, your tone, but also your nonverbals, the way that I look at you, the way how fast I speak, my condescending tone or more my empowering tone. So it's really down in those interactions. I do a lot of collaborative policy with government groups and agencies or different businesses, and it comes down to how people treat each other in that collaborative process, how they respect or how they save face or protect others. Or protect their constituents. It really does come down to those micro interactions between two different people who think vastly different.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if this is related to marriage counseling. I mean, I wonder if you could be a marriage counselor if things get slow in the education.
Well, actually, it's really funny that you say that, because I do consulting on the side as well, and I do divorce mediation. So I probably once a month I help someone work through their divorce. I don't like them, but they're good money, so I keep doing them.
So is one of the reasons that there are people that aren't able to get fine jobs today is that you have too many jobs?
No.
You're taking everybody's
job.
That's
not it at all. I do a lot of the work I do is pro bono, but for the divorce mediations, I do charge for those. But what's really interesting, it's the same sort of concepts. It's two people coming together and they can't work through their differences, and so they need the help of a third party. And so that's sort of my job, is to facilitate a healthy conversation, because even though they will never be married again, they may have children in common, or they might want to sort of have a peaceful, somewhat experience. And so that's a side thing, though. Most of the work that I do is on environmental conflict.
And one of the things that I found, and I've interviewed, you know, almost a dozen professors now from CSU Channel Islands, is that you tend to make learning fun. And I can't think of a better subject than communications. Do you do role playing?
Oh, students love it. In fact, I don't think it's me. I'm convinced it's the subject. But how I structure my courses is I'll teach them a concept, and then we do a role play to help them illustrate the concept. And the role plays can be sort of a romantic one that relates to them, or they can be a business negotiation, or we can say, you know, you're the head of a company, you have to negotiate this new contract with a potential client, or you're going to merge businesses. And the students love it because it's real world. It's applicable. Students don't have at least the students that I work with, they have excellent focus and excellent attention, but you have to engage them. And so conflict management is a really easy course to engage them, because I can teach a concept for 20, 30 minutes, and then we can practice it, and then we can debrief it, and then we can link it to the concepts in the course. So it makes it for a very interesting and enjoyable approach to teaching.
One of the things I did when I was teaching at City College, I gave a non-credit lecture on job interviewing. And I asked the class at the very beginning, where does the interview begin? At what moment does the interview begin? And the answer for me was, in your closet. What do you look like? You know, do you look like the person that they want to hire? So I think, in my view, and I'd like to ask you this, is that part of communicating too? It's what you look like and how you present yourself to the world.
Absolutely. And the fact that you just mentioned that, I'm probably going to have you come speak to my students now about interviewing techniques. So we'll talk about that later. But absolutely, how you come across, even the clothes that you're wearing, it's so very important, because it communicates either respect or professionalism or a lack of caring. So
how can, before we get into some of the heavier stuff, how can we use some of these techniques in our daily life with not just your spouse, but also with friends? Is there a way that you can take some of these rules and become more civil, particularly in an environment that we're in today, where everyone, you know, the first question people ask is, what political party do you belong to? And if it's the wrong answer, you tend to turn around and walk away.
You know, it's I feel that tension in our community as well. And my students and I, we talk about it in our classes. I teach them, this is my favorite role play that I teach the students, is how to communicate a concern. So if I had a concern with you, I would name the behavior, I would name the consequence of the behavior, and I would be very specific about what I want to change, and then I would offer something, because it doesn't need to be a scolding, it's more of a dialogue. And I think, I mean, the particulars sort of change depending on the situation, but it remains the same, that the last thing you want to do is shut down communication. You always want to open up and create a dialogue so that people can kind of share their difference. I'm not a big fan of the phrase, we'll just agree to disagree. I think that that shows a disrespect for each other. I think that a different approach would be to, I don't agree with you, but I want to learn where you're coming from. I want to unpack sort of your ideology and figure out kind of what we have in common and build from there. Because if I've learned anything in my years dealing with people in conflict, is that they have more in common than they're willing to talk about. But it's those differences that kind of keep us separated. And so those will remain, but you have to begin somewhere.
One of the things that AHA does in its work is restorative justice. And one of the good things about restorative justice is, rather than punishing somebody, for example, who's bullying, is to try to help them develop some empathy by understanding how they've hurt the other person. And for the person who's been hurt to sort of understand where the, if I use the expression perpetrator, what motivated them. And, you know, by understanding rather than punishment, you tend to find a way of resolving that behavior.
And healing a community, right? Both the perpetrator and the offender. I took students to New Zealand to study restorative justice about in 2010. So gosh, it's been about 7 years ago, because New Zealand is a socialistist country, has restorative justice institutionalized. Mm. And so here we have programs and elements of it, but it's not part of our system. And that's what you're speaking to is exactly what we study in communication and conflict. It's this idea that how we talk about conflict, how we talk about situations, that's going to lead to how policies are shaped, how people interact, what's valued, what's not valued in our society. And we need to change that conversation so opportunities like restorative justice that you're familiar with could be more prevalent.
And one of the problems today with Twitter is that Twitter is a one-way conversation. It doesn't provide for opportunity to ameliorate disagreements on the spot. It sort of creates an announcement that starts somebody going, and then the other person goes, and it just doesn't help to reconcile different points of view.
You know, every time I post, every time I've commented on a Facebook post, on a political post that I don't agree with, I always regret it, because nothing good ever comes of it. But it's tempting, but it's inefficient. It doesn't meet your goals. And so I agree with you. It shuts down the conversation. People aren't really trying to create a dialogue to learn and understand. They're more so just trying to pontificate on what they know or their opinion, and it can be turned quite toxic quite fast.
Yeah,
so.
Well, for me, it hasn't been a problem because I only have two followers. So when I make a mistake,
are you one of them?
No, he's not one of them. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Dr. Tracy Lee Clark, Associate Professor of Communications at CSUCI, and we're talking about conflict resolution and conflict communication and resolution. And, I just said that AHA uses innovative social-emotional learning and character building. Both those terms are really relevant to what you do. Emotional intelligence is something that if you possess it, and we don't teach it in our schools, if you possess it, you probably are more likely to be able to communicate effectively.
Yeah.
And because you begin to understand what the other person is saying.
I tell my students that, you know, oftentimes in conflict, we have a goal, but what the way that we choose to handle the conflict is inefficient, and it lacks emotional maturity. To do the right thing or the more efficient thing is often more challenging. It's easier to stomp or to stonewall because you get immediate gratification. You get the attention you're seeking. But in the long term, it rots relationships. So those techniques, they're challenging to kind of get your head around. But once you learn those emotional mature responses to situations, it kind of feeds over to other aspects of your life as well.
So are there specific sticking points that are prevalent in most communication conflicts?
You know, I knew that question was coming, and I think that what happens is that most people speak their positions. They speak their bottom line. They don't speak their interests behind them, interests such as identity or feelings or needs that they need to meet. So I think people go around saying, this is what I want. People are very good at articulating what their bottom line is, but they're not so good at articulating the reasons behind, because it's not normal to go around saying, well, you know, that really hurts my feeling and it challenges my identity when you talk over me in a meeting. People don't speak like that, but imagine that if we did. So I think a sticking point would be that people aren't willing to be vulnerable, and they aren't willing to really speak what their core needs are, because maybe they're afraid that those wouldn't be taken seriously or they would be further victimized. I'm not exactly sure the reasons behind that, but I know that in conflict, that vulnerability and that transparency creates trust, and that's what you need in order to solve anything.
Yeah, you mentioned role play. One of the things that AHA does is they have some role play, and in one case, there are two people arguing, and one says to the other, that hat you're wearing is really ugly, you look terrible. And one answer would be, well, what your shoes are even worse than my hat. The correct way, when the person says, I don't like your hat, you look at them and say, oh, that really hurts me. I thought it was a nice hat. and it really disarms them.
It does. They don't know what to do with that response.
Right. And it's a true response, too, because usually before you lash back out, you are hurt.
Yeah.
So it's a genuine reaction.
It takes so much, though, to respond instead of defensively, to respond sort of genuinely and say, you know, that really kind of hurt me. So excellent. AHA's doing some great things.
Thank you. You know, the thing that I found to be unfortunate about business, and I spent 35 years in business, is that things that make you a better human being, sometimes you can't do successfully in business. So if I would have used that technique in business, at least when I was in business, I would have been probably penalized.
Eaten alive, maybe?
Eaten alive in the moment is not as important as penalized as somebody who doesn't really have the wherewithal to be a leader. One of the unfortunate things about business is it's not something that we do. It's also how we get formed. It's almost mm-hmm. like it's important as first grade. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I had to do when I retired 20 years ago is unlearn some of the behavior that I used to be successful. And sometimes the things you need to be successful in life are not consistent with what you need to be successful in business. And one of the really good things, and then I'll shut up, about all of this bad stuff coming out about bad behavior with the other gender, is that maybe people will now be able to look at behavior and say, you know, we should respond to it, not just, you know, be stoic about it. And so that's maybe one of the good things about what's going on.
Absolutely.
So one of the things that you're an expert in, and you've written a book about it, is environmental conflict communications. And there's a pretty big set of words. What distinguishes environmental conflict from just conflict?
Oh, that's a great question. That sounds like a test question for my students. Yeah. I'm in a unique...
And by the way, this is radio, so it's not multiple choice.
Okay. Fair enough.
So you have to give an answer.
So people can't call in and give their answer?
Yeah.
All right. So what's really unique about my position as a professor is that before I became a professor, I was a consultant. I was an environmental mediator. So I'm able to sort of bring that...
Okay, stop. What's an environmental mediator?
So environmental mediator. So for example, if somebody wanted to alleviate traffic, they wanted to run a road through wetlands, but the wetlands were pristine and there was endangered species. So automatically that becomes a conflict, right? So an environmental mediator, instead of going to litigation, I would bring all the parties together, anybody who had a stake in the issue, and we would together collaboratively create solutions that meet everybody's need instead of being sort of at a standstill through litigation. So as an environmental mediator, your job is to create collaborative policy in a way that sort of avoids litigation and meets people's needs.
Boy,
it's hard.
Well, that's so interesting because I've never heard of it.
Really?
I didn't know people. Now, I guess it's in a way, it's a self-select. Your clients are self-selecting. They're pretty emotionally intelligent to actually want to hire someone like you.
Well,
but there
you
are
know,
places where they don't do that.
But there are also environmental policies that sort of govern what we do with federal money or on federal land, called the National Environmental Policy Act. And within that process, there are opportunities to engage with the community or to engage with the public.
You didn't read the newspaper today.
I did.
Secretary Pruitt has
He's trying to challenge that.
Yes.
Yes. And a lot of us in the field are very nervous about that because environmental policy, that's what protects our environment. And that's the National Environmental Policy Act is a process that keeps the government honest because it makes them go through a decision-making process that discloses what they're going to do and demonstrates that they have gone through a range of decision-making so that they've given the decision a hard look and they're not just arbitrarily making decisions that affect our environment. It actually holds sort of their feet to the ground and makes them think through some of their decisions. So when you are trying to challenge the strictness, they're saying that they want to streamline it because it takes too long. But the reason why it takes too long is because they're doing a thorough job, because they're making sure that what we choose to do with our environment has gone through a strong vetting process. So the field of environmental collaborative policy is a little nervous right now about our current leadership and how the changeover with the Council for Environmental Quality, how that's going to influence how policy is done. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to kind of go off on
good.
A tangent,
no.
But it's very dear to my heart because it could have a grave retributions for our environment.
And what do you say to people that's give up? They say, you know what, this is so frustrating. Nothing's going to help. I'm out of here. I'm going to go fishing.
Well, you know, I understand that frustration because a lot of times people will work on an environmental issue and then they won't get what they want. But a lot of times they do. And the agencies that I work with, their goal is to make the best decision possible. But oftentimes they are trying to make a decision and meet the demands of multiple stakeholders. So it's not so easy. I can't just give you exactly what you want. But if enough people get involved and if enough people create a voice and they demonstrate that they don't want something in their community or that they would like things to be a different way, it's been my experience that the agencies that I work with, they really do respond in kind. So, and there's ways you can, excuse me, I apologize. There's ways that you can have your needs met and they can mitigate any negative impact on the environment. So I would say don't give up. It sounds like it's kind of sometimes a losing battle, but there are those wins.
And, you know, what I think is interesting, to be fair, there are strident, and I'll use that word nicely, people on both sides of the political spectrum. I've met people that have the same views I have, but they're so far over the edge that I can't even deal with them. So I would imagine part of the challenge is not simply getting people to agree, but also people to be able to look at both sides, because it's not right or wrong. It's everyone sort of puts their
exactly. Their, you know, and people ask me, how do I maintain neutrality when I do environmental remediations? Because I consider myself an environmentalist. But my answer is that I really do believe in the process. I really do believe that if you bring people with divergent interests together, that they can kind of brainstorm and they can do something that can kind of meet the needs of everybody. I truly do believe in the process. What you said earlier was interesting about sort of people on different sides of the spectrum politically. I have found people that have very different political views come together on environmental issues because they all care about the community where they live and they all have a sense of place. And so when I meet somebody, I like to get more down to what they think about specific issues instead of just sort of their political formats, because I found that if I ask more questions and I get to know them, we have more in common than we think. It's easy for me to kind of want to shut them down, but if I can kind of peel back that onion and start talking about it, at the end of the day, I think we probably agree on a lot of things environmentally than I once understood.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7, Monday through Saturday, and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Dr. Tracy Lee Clark, an associate professor of communications at CSU Channel Island. So let's just step back. And how did this all start? You started communicating when you were one? Is that what you were saying? how did you get into, like, what was your education? What was your background?
Well, I'm the youngest of 8 kids, and so I think that I started pretty early on how to handle conflict management. Don't tell my family I said that, but I always wanted to be a professor even when I was a little girl, and I didn't know what field I wanted to go into, and then my first class in college was a communication field or communication course, and I just fell in love, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, if I look back, if I would have planned it, I wouldn't have been able to get to where I am. Life just kind of unfolded, but I was really had a great opportunity. I was really lucky to be able to have some great mentors in the field, people who educated me and who were inspirational to me, much like what AHA does. Mm-hmm. And it made me want to go into something that I could be passionate about. And I'm passionate about peace, and I'm passionate about the environment. So when I went away to graduate school, I took a course, and I became a mediator on the side and became a professor, and it all just kind of is coming together. Did I answer your question?
The field of communications has really changed. When I went to school in the communications department at my university, it was about how to be a weather girl or
right.
a TV anchor.
Yeah.
It wasn't about
it's very different.
Individual. So so what are some of the subjects that and some of the specialties that kids today can benefit from, not just in terms of what they can do to behave better, but what kind of careers are there in communications?
Well, I could go on forever, so you'll have to stop me. But one of the things, not to kind of tout the Channel Islands communication program, but one of the cool things about our program is that we have a very unique focus. Students graduate with a degree in nonprofit management, environmental communication, or health communication. Most undergraduate degrees just offer general courses like organizational or interpersonal or public relations, and those are very important, and our students get coursework curriculum in those areas, but then they also get to specialize. And so when you graduate from Channel Islands, you have sort of an additional specialty, whether it's environmental health or nonprofit. But saying that, that wasn't your question. I just wanted to give a plug for the program. But students, the cool thing about the field of communication is that when students graduate, they've got the interpersonal skills, they have the knowledge of how a business works, and they've got the public relations, the marketing skills, and so they can virtually do anything. Saying that, sometimes it's a little bit challenging to guide our students because it's kind of a double-edged sword. You could do anything with a communication degree, but because you can do anything, it's a little bit hard to sort of guide the students. So the neat thing, though, about the field of communication is it's very versatile. Communication, it is in every aspect of every job, whether it's nonprofit or it's business or it's what you're doing here today, interviewing, whether it's creating brochures, communicating in oral form or written form. It's an incredibly important skill. So if we can teach our students to write well and to speak well, then when they go out into the workplace, they can take those skills with them, and no matter what they do, they'll be a success.
And you, speaking of speaking, you're from a foreign country and you speak English very well.
Yes, I'm from Canada. I was born and raised.
Right,
yes.
But you do speak very well.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I work on it.
Yeah. So you mentioned health communications. What is that? Is that bedside manner, or is that
a little bit? Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of things. It's also a health promotion. It's campaigns to create better behavior. It's not my area, but my colleagues do a wonderful job. It is bedside manners. You know, you go to a doctor and there's a lot of fear involved in going to that doctor. And if they don't have a good bedside manner, you may be less likely to do what you need to do to become healthy. So it's the interpersonal aspect, but it's also the aspect of engaging with communities about healthy behavior. Or the communication that goes on within a hospital. I'm a little bit out of my specialty because that's not my area, but I do know my colleagues do a great job.
You know, that's never stopped me.
And it's never stopped me either.
I'll talk about anything.
Me too, right? You ask and I'll answer, whether it's true or not.
Right. I go to the fringe of my knowledge every day. So the interesting thing about one of the things you do is that CSU Channel Islands is the administrator or the in charge of Santa Rosa Island, which is a beautiful island in one of the Channel Islands that has, as it turns out, Native American burial grounds that are very sacred. And you are involved with Native Americans. Tell us a little bit about that.
I will. But first of all, I would like to tell you that I take my students out to Santa Rosa Island to do research every semester. We go out for 3 days and we do restorative projects, whether it's restoring the land or creating outreach plans to engage different communities in national parks. For example, we just did a big project where we're trying to reach a Latino community to get them to use the park. And so Santa Rosa is very near and dear to my heart.
I just got back from there.
Did you really?
Yes. Well,
I want to hear about that experience.
It was wonderful.
Can you talk about it?
Yes. I went with the president of your school. And it was terrific.
It's a neat island, isn't it?
It's a neat island.
And but did you have to take the 3-hour boat ride, or did you get to fly out?
I flew out there.
Yeah, see.
I don't do boats.
Yeah, see, we're hardcore. 3.5 hours, and I get sick every time. And every time I think, I am never going to do this again. But then my students have such a life-changing experience. I think, okay, one more semester. And I won't stop doing it because it's such a great experience.
To show you, this will get you really mad. To show you how spoiled I am, when I got to the plane, I said, how long is this? I figured it'd be 10 minutes. They said 25 minutes. I said, 25 minutes? I have to fly for 25 minutes.
What a brat.
Yeah, what a brat. Exactly.
But I have to also tell you, the best thing about the island is that my students they can't use social media because I don't give them the Wi-Fi and there's no cell phone range. So they are completely unplugged for 3 days. And talk about interpersonal communication skill building. I mean, they're talking to each other. And some of them say that it's profound. They've never had an experience like that. And I think it's the island, but it's also that they're unplugged for 3 days in a row. And it's pretty cool.
Okay, So this leads me to, you know, we talk about, you know, kids learning to communicate in a with a, you know, an attempt to be good in business or to be a health professional. When you're on the island, and I've been there, and it's beautiful, but the place that you stay is not the Ritz. Is there a conflict when you put all these kids together and they're all living in bunk beds? Everybody
and
gets along?
And one, because I run a tight ship and, you know, there's ground rules, but also because we have great students and they're not entitled. And if they are entitled, then I give them a chore, you know. We all pitch in. I buy the food with a grant that I get, but they all pitch in. They all do the work. And no, there hasn't been any conflicts. Although I do have to say, I took students at one time, but it was a unique program where I wanted to encourage younger students to do research and to go to college. And so we called it a sibling trip. And so we had Channel Island students bring their little brothers or their little sisters. Mm. And then they came out to the island and we did some restorative projects. Mm. And there was a little bit of drama, but it was between the family members. And it was because the children were younger and they just missed their parents.
Well,
so,
what I think is really important about relationship that you have with Santa Rosa is that you could see what it was 20 years ago. And how much better it is today with the elimination of cattle, the elimination of horses, the elimination of animals that don't belong there, with the restoration of plants, with the respect for burial grounds. And then you can see some of the pushing that's going on with the current administration to change all that on Santa Rosa and bring back horses and bring back. So you get a picture of the what's at stake in this environmental battle, and you see it in real life. And you, when you give the kids that experience, it's not just a textbook.
Exactly. The things that we teach them in the books and the concepts, they come alive because we say, this island right here, there's all these different stakeholders with all these different ideas about what we should do with the island. How do we rectify that? And it's just, it's a cool experience to take students out there and to kind of have those conversations. We're very lucky to have that relationship with Santa Rosa.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers Brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers Brand Showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, communicate, and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Dr. Tracy Lee Clark, Associate Professor of Communications at CSU Channel Islands. And, you know, one of the things that is sort of a great paradox to me about today is that, in a way, kids are communicating too much. The social media, you know, people don't walk across the street without Facebooking or tweeting or sending an email. Is part of the role of a good communications program how to stop people from communicating?
Yes, it is. It
absolutely
is. And
be better quality communications.
Yeah. I had to travel a couple weeks ago, and I was driving down to LAX, and I was looking out the window on the shuttle, and everybody was on their phone, and it just blew my mind. I mean, I think it really is a genuine problem. And my students recognize that it's a problem. My students talk about, you know, how they want to unplug and how, you know, but it's an addiction. And so, absolutely, I think I consider it part of my job to give those students some quality interactions and to teach them how to handle conflict instead of just firing off a mean text, right? Which is normally how people might handle conflict in a situation without the skills that I'm trying to teach them. So yes.
We got off track a few minutes ago. We were talking about Native Americans. Tell us about some of the work that you're doing with Native Americans. And you wrote a book about it.
I did. Yeah, I did. Thank you for asking. Yeah. My before I was a professor, I mentioned that I was a consultant, and I worked a lot with Native American tribes with environmental conflict, not necessarily representing the tribes, but engaging with the tribes to understand how the issue impacted them and their people. And I worked with the Nez Perce on a wolf reintroduction project up in Idaho, and then I did my dissertation on the Goshutes. They are a group in Southwest Utah that want to house nuclear waste on their reservation, and it's controversial. And so that's what I did for my dissertation, is I studied sort of that conflict, sort of that tribal, intertribal conflict, and how it manifests itself and how it impacted and influenced policy that governed sort of their land and what they did.
So this consulting was within the tribe, but wasn't the tribe versus the government?
It was within the tribe, yeah.
That's interesting. So yeah. They were willing to engage in that. You know, it's interesting. When I was younger and I went to a therapist when I was a preteen, we were all ashamed that I was seeing a therapist. And there's certain cultures that, you know, don't like help. I was surprised then that the Native Americans would be able to embrace that type of help, because they seem to be, you know, kind of macho.
Well, I need
that's
to...
That's stereotypical. That's what
right,
I...
Right, right. Well, I do need to clarify. I offered my services to them because I was interested in the conflict, and I had already created strong relationships with tribal members. And so it was an assessment and an interview process, and my goal was to kind of help bring them together. But I agree with you. There is a stigma just among, I think, everybody about sort of needing help or needing mediation. But, you know, the alternative to be gridlocked in litigation is not a good alternative.
Well,
when having a good conversation, litigation has its place, but when having a good conversation could sort of solve half your issues, that's the goal. So.
Well, yeah. In marriage, it's divorce, if other than remediation. In countries, it's war. I agree that we'd be much better off trying to communicate. Standing Rock, which is a famous place, what's going on there at Standing Rock?
So Standing Rock is the Seuss tribe. They won, but I know that there has been efforts by the current administration to undo some of the work that Obama supported. What's interesting about that situation is that you can't sue just because you don't like something, right? And that's never what it was about. They weren't suing because they were mad because they didn't like the outcome. They have their treaty rights weren't respected in the process, and the agency that ran the National Environmental Policy Act process didn't give, it's what's called a hard look doctrine. They didn't give a hard look to the issue of environmental justice. And if what you do or a decision that you make on the environment, if it negatively impacts a group of people or the land or the environment, and you don't mitigate for that, then that's where you're going to get, you know, sued, or that's where you're going to have conflict.
So that book was about Native Americans and nuclear waste. Your other book is about American environmental conflict management.
Yeah.
Now, is that something that is more geared to business than to personal relationships?
Nope.
Or both?
No, it's geared towards sort of government relationships on how to create policy that sort of governs what we do with either federal money or federal land, or even state land and state money. What's cool about this book is I mentioned a little bit earlier, I was a consultant before, and now I'm a professor, but there was no books out there on how to do it. There are books about environmental conflict, but there's not any books that talk to you about how to do it. There's some pamphlets, and so being an academic, I was in a unique position to draw upon my consulting, but also draw upon my ability to write books and engage and take complex ideas and translate it. And so that's what the book is. It's more of a textbook. It is a how-to book. I do teach some theory in there, only so far as the theory can be turned into practice. So.
And it must be very difficult to teach someone how to do something that resolves conflict when the name of the purpose of some of these activities is to win.
Yeah.
And so if the idea is to win, this is not helpful.
You know, it's when you do an environmental management process, sometimes it's a year-long process where you're meeting once a month for 8 hours to really tease out the issues. And a lot of the organizations that I work with, their goal is to win, right? Their goal is to sort of get their way. And you need to respect that, but help them meet those needs, but also meet the needs of the person across the table. And that therein lies the challenge. I'm making it sound very easy. It's very challenging. Oftentimes as I'm mediating, I'm thinking, well, I don't know what to do next. And it kind of, sometimes it all comes together and other times it doesn't, but it is a very forgiving process. And for me, my biggest goal is to create an opportunity for them to have a dialogue. I don't solve the conflict for them. I just create a space in order for them to do it.
Is environmental conflict resolution more difficult than just other community issues?
I mean, yeah.
We have so many community issues we fight about, but does environmental go to the top of the list of difficult subjects?
You know, I would say that it is, and I think the reason why is because the environmental issues, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of science that we don't know. So we're making decisions that impact our future with an element of uncertainty, and I think that's a challenge. The other aspect I think that makes environmental issues challenging is the idea of interdisciplinarity. I mean, as a communication or political science person, I don't have the answers. Biologist doesn't have all the answers, and ecologist doesn't. You got to bring them all together. But when they come to the table, they're bringing different mindsets, different ideologies, different acronyms, different language, and you have to kind of whittle all through that, never mind that they think completely differently about the issue. And so I think what makes environmental conflict challenging is that you're navigating this interdisciplinary stew where you're bringing everybody together and you need them all to solve the issue, but with those differences sort of come sort of that history and the ideology that's a little bit challenging.
Yeah, one of the issues I think is how you ask the question. So in this town, one of the big issues is a workplace housing. You know, how do you create housing for people that make $90,000 a year who can't afford to live here? So if you ask the question, how do we create housing, then you are off and running, but not paying attention to the environment. If you pay attention simply to the environment and say, we love Santa Barbara, where you can't build more than a half a story, and you can only have one house on 25 acres, I'm
joking. That's not an answer either.
So one of the things about communicating is answering the right question, is asking the right question to begin the discussion.
And getting to those values, because you're absolutely right. Economic development is important. It's an important part of our community, and you can't ignore those economic interests. You just can't. And so you have to kind of bring them all together, and therein lies the challenge.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm here with Dr. Tracy Lee Clark, Associate Professor of Communications at CSU Channel Islands. And we're talking about how to communicate, both on a social level and a business level and a community level. And we're, you know, I guess so far we've been talking about almost in a laboratory when we have people together in a room and we're trying to, how do you deal with rage? How do you deal, if you were advising a congressman that was doing a form like they have after when they come back from recess and everyone's screaming at them, what are there communication techniques to take an angry crowd and calm them down?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, if we had more time, I'd explain how I would do it specifically. But first of all, I would never let a mob or a crowd be, right? Like, you would structure the meeting so that when people came in, there was different stations, and then you would sort of been able to sort of manage that. Whenever I had those meetings, I've had meetings where there's been 500 people that are angry, and you just can't manage that. And so it's the way that you structure the meeting. But also, I have to say that, and also you get them down from their positions to their interests, like I explained earlier. You try to speak to sort of their needs, not their position. But I would say the third thing is that oftentimes when people are in those situations, they use that mob mentality, they use bullying behavior, and I just don't engage. I've had to run public meetings where I have had security there, and I've had to say, if you're not going to play by these ground rules, and the ground rules are respective. They're not meant to make people feel silly and childish, but they're meant to sort of create a situation where you can have a genuine dialogue where somebody doesn't sort of take over. So those are the ways I would handle it.
Okay, but so I was going to ask you specifically, we talked about one of the experiments that AHA does, and I think you agreed that you could use that technique or have used that technique. What about telling the crowd how you feel? Does that show weakness? If somebody says, you didn't answer the question, and another person gets up and says, you didn't answer the question, can you say something like, oh, I'm really sorry, I thought I did? Can you do something that sort of shows that you're kind of
Yeah, absolutely. But the trick, though, is it has to be genuine. People don't like to feel handled. So if you say things like, oh, it seems like you're sad, that's just going to make people angrier. So I think if there's a genuineness, my experience is when I'm vulnerable and real and say, hey, look, I'm just really trying to get to the bottom of this issue and create a space for you guys to kind of create issues. If I'm very real with them, I usually get a positive response. Not always, but I usually get a positive response.
So why do you think, and I think I know the answer to this, unfortunately, why do you think this doesn't take place in our government discourse? Forget about the public. You know, people don't even come to the chambers when the other party's talking. You know, it's in order to communicate better, you have to have the other person at least in the room.
I think that the infrastructure on how it's set up leads to sort of that divisive nature. I think that if there was a different way that we conceptualized how people engage on issues, but I think it starts sort of at the local level. I mean, I would love for it to start at in D.C., but I don't think that it will. And so I think that locally, we just have to be able to create those spaces where we can have those genuine dialogues. I think the way that it's structured, the way that it's set up creates that divisiveness.
And one of the problems of that behavior is it drives people that would probably be really good at helping society by being politicians, not be politicians. Like, you know, who would want to do that?
It's not rewarding. I can't imagine that it would be. So.
Yeah. So your book, is it something for the layman? Let's assume that I'm not getting along with anybody. Should I go out and buy your book? And if so, where do I get it?
It's very nice of you to ask. Yes, you can buy my book. It's by Sage is the publisher. It's on Amazon.
Oh, Sage is a local company.
Yeah, yeah.
And the book is called?
Environmental Conflict Management.
And you're the author.
I am the author. So, I am a co-author. I'm the first author, and then I have a colleague, Tarla Ray Peterson, who wrote the book as well.
So I want all our listeners to buy it, or I'm going to be very mad.
That would be very gracious.
Right.
And it's also open access, so you can go online and get access to it for free.
Oh, so we can read it for free.
Yeah,
that's not
you
fair.
Can.
That's not fair.
Not to me, right? But it is a good idea because Sage wanted it that way, and they asked me, and I said absolutely.
You know, this is off the subject, but when I taught at City College, I was really shocked that the cost of the textbook was more than the course.
Yeah,
You know, which is really...
I know that we're making big strides to kind of make that more accessible books more accessible for our students, but that means my royalties go down, but that's not why I wrote it, so we're all good.
So, final question. I understand that one of the things you're going to be working on is having meetings in Santa Barbara and Ventura to make the Republicans and Democrats all see eye to eye.
Did I say that? Yeah, did
no,
I commit to that?
I just assumed that. I assume with your credentials that's what you should be doing. Is that not true?
Well, if somebody asked me in a heartbeat, I would.
Well, I you're doing enough as it is teaching these kids how to communicate. And thank you so much, Tracy Lee.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, Channel Islands, for all your great professors. And you've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.
It's 3.